If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
Have you ever been in weather? And I don't mean it's raining in July and you're sitting on the deck under an umbrella and you've got a cigar and a drink. I'm talking about weather. I'm talking about getting picked up and smashed down again and again and again for days. It does something to the human body and it does something to the mind and it breaks us down. I've been in it years ago in a bad storm off the Bay of Biscay in the Atlantic when I was a kid. And you start losing your sense of self. And now the United States is getting hit with two storms, the one in Texas and now the new one, Irma. And people tend, under pressure and getting smashed, to lose that sense of things. That's that thing that makes them what they think are good, virtuous human beings. But the other day, I saw a video from CNN, a man giving a generator, his last one, to a woman who needed it. And someone tweeted out, there's more to this great country than what happens in Washington. And you can see him giving what he needs to her so that her father can live on his oxygen tank. And that happens all the time. And it happens without government, and it happens without news media, kumbaya moments. But there's another thing that happens, and that's our worst selves. And I wonder how people take it and survive it and don't break into that worst self, that selfish self. You're trying to survive, but you have that business where you become selfish for yourself and for others that you love against those who are also in similar circumstances. A few years ago, a friend of mine living in Virginia had a power outage, just a small power outage, lasted a week. I know he's a friend of mine because I've known him all my life. He's one of my best friends. He's my brother. And he lives in this subdivision where all, you know, people are like the lowest degree is a master's degree. Everyone's got doctorates and they're all policy wonks. So the power went out and he had some steaks in his fridge and he brings them over to a neighbor that has a generator. And the neighbor said, I'll take them. I'll keep them. Don't worry about it. This power outage won't last a day. It lasted like 6 days, seven in August. And if you've ever been in Washington, D.C. in the late summer, you know it's like being in New Orleans in the late summer. A swamp and a steamy swamp at that. So a couple days later, the guy says to my brother, well, I took a couple of the steaks because, you know, I'm holding them. He took his fee. He took his bleeping fee. And that's what happens when people are hurting and scared. And whatever that is that keeps us civil starts wearing away. And we're going to see it again in Florida, like we saw it in Houston. And it depends on culture. It depends on their faith. It depends on what kind of people they really are. And it will be revealed to the nation. Because I think that if you have a strong faith in God and you understand your place in this world is temporary and that you have to love your neighbor, that will carry you through. And we're all praying for everybody in Florida, everyone you know. There are many people in Florida with Chicago connections. And we're praying for all of them as well. But culture is revealed at times of great stress. It's been revealed in other parts of our country at times of great stress and things didn't look so good. And here's a prayer for all the people of Florida and all the people mopping up in Texas, because we're all God's creatures and we should always remember to love each other.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
So this is John Cass of the Chicago Way, Radio Free Chicago in podcast form with my podcast partner. Yes, partner. I really mean that. Jeff Carlin, the bebearded, burly Blackhawks fan and behind the scenes, behind the glass man who's the best sound, best producer in Chicago, clearly, and I'm not lying about it. And for WGN AM's Rokan show with Anna DeVolantis. And later we're going to have Tom Bevan, Real Clear Politics, and Scott Stanis, the cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, who has to sit with, let's put it this way, he's on the editorial board, and I think he's holding strong, but I don't know. And, okay, so a couple things, Jeff Carlin, what is on your mind?
Well, it's football season, John, and I know you wrote about this last week, but I'm with you on this, and it drives me nuts more and more. The idea that people embrace the game of football at all. The NFL, if you want to, people go around shouting, you know, from the mountaintops that Big Pharma is awful and healthcare is awful and the gas companies are awful and you name it. I mean, there are insurance companies, the banks, they're all these big, greedy, evil companies that take advantage of people for their own benefit and to line their pockets. The NFL, the same exact thing.
Why is that?
Because the NFL doesn't, they use people as commodities. They trade people's lives and their well-being as commodities to sell crappy shirts and crappy hot dogs and beer.
And gorgeous blondes with tight little shorts and boots.
Well, yeah.
As they're showing the sex violence thing of the NFL.
Well, yeah.
Right?
I mean, the cheerleaders and the cheerleaders and the players fall into the same category. I mean, they're both being used. I mean,
who does that? Who peddles flesh? Who are the people that peddle flesh? Oh, they're pimps.
Right.
That's who peddles flesh. Mm-hmm. And then, especially since that flesh is usually destroyed. And then, who are the people that would protect pimps? Other pimps.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I know that sounds harsh, but you know what? I'm listening. I don't mind a former NFL player trying to make some money, talking to on the radio, talking to fat guys in their cars about who's got guts. Because the fat guys in their cars on the radio never played the game, or most of them never did.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them never got hit in the mouth. I'm just telling you, they haven't. Most people haven't. This is a fantasy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Violent fantasy. So what about the journalism that promotes it?
It bugs me. And as somebody who works in this field.
Yeah, we both do. We have friends who do it.
Right. It's my job to cover it and my job to make sure I know what's going on to it. But when I turn off my phone or I turn off my job hat, my producer's hat, I look away from it. I don't watch it. I can't.
You told me this a couple days ago, and I'm glad you brought it up. You said you don't watch football.
No, I stopped. I stopped watching football about 2.5 years ago, 3 years ago, when that big CTE report came out of Pittsburgh, and it was like, look, they're covering this up. And then I read the backstory of how hard the NFL worked to discredit the doctors who were doing these CTE studies and who were trying to understand why people were becoming, you know, essentially shells of themselves at the age of 50. And nobody could – the NFL was working so hard and so deviously to keep that from getting out in the open because they wanted to protect their billion-dollar empire. And it's abhorrent. I mean, you wouldn't – if I went around and said, hey, I'm starting a league. I'm going to get a group of guys together. I'm going to put them into an arena, and they're going to beat the crap out of each other until someone is still left standing.
Yeah, I'd go for that.
Would you come out and watch it?
Yeah, I would, because you know what? Okay, here's why. I like prize fights. All right? You know why I like prize fights over boxing, prize fighting over football? It's honest. These guys are nothing special. They know they're nothing special. They get in the ring. They know what's going to happen to them. They hope to get a little money and get out before they get hurt too bad. Okay, fine. That's their life. They're Americans. They're free. This other thing, what's bad about football, it's sold as a family thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like mommy comes, here's the commercial. They're marketing women now, right?
Yeah. Well, they had all those flacks where players were abusing. And the players, I know, it's their choice. They play their choice, but sometimes it's one of your only options or hopes of getting out of a bad situation or becoming a monetary success is getting lured into the limelight of the NFL.
Well, so then you go to college for free. And you don't even study because they want you to be kinesiologists.
Right.
You know, okay, look, you go to a Big Ten game and you see all the kinesiologists. There's a lot of kinesiology majors. I don't know what the hell they're supposed to do for a living if they get out. You know, not everyone's going to make the NFL. I just can't. I don't like it. I can handle the violence of the game better than I can handle the bullshit from journalism about protecting it.
Sure.
And the jock sniffing of many broadcasters who yuck it up. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because if why don't you yuck up adolescent hookers? Right. Is that why not? Because that's what you're doing. You're taking these kids and you're turning them into flesh for your money. Mm-hmm. That's what it's about, and people are feeding on it. And you know who's making the money? Whoever started running those fantasy football leagues.
Yeah.
You know who that is. That's a Chicago thing.
Yep.
It comes from here. It started here. The guys who run it, this is a Chicago way thing. Okay? Figure it out. So if you're going to do it, if you're going to beat somebody's brains out, I'm with you. I'd rather see it in a prize fight. Okay? Okay, I understand that. I don't understand mommy holding her tray of cheese foods, you know, like cheese whiz on crackers, and she's got her Bears jersey on, and her daughter has, in the commercial, virtual daughter has the Packers jersey on, and the son-in-law has the Vikings, and she shakes her head like, oh my God, what am I going to do with these? But we're family together in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Screw you, okay?
It's so bad because it starts so young, and there's this idea that, you know, you play the game, you play hurt, you play hard, and, you know, just keep pushing. But if people really, you know, if you said to a kid, hey, you know, you're 10 years old, you're going to play this game, and there's a good possibility that some part of your body won't work correctly for the rest of your life, would you do it? Would your parents push you into it? No. You know what? My parents, when I wanted to play football in high school, my parents said, they said, you can do it. We're not going to stop you, but know this, that the majority of people who go into this game come out of it with an injury for the rest of their life and no money. And this was, you know, I was a kid in the late 80s, and it was like they saw it then, but it's still taken this long for people to even to start talking about it openly, saying it's a violent, dangerous sport. And they say, oh, we've got pads and we've got doctors and we've seen what the league has done with this. They had doctors juicing guys just to get them on the field and ruining their lives even more.
I don't think I ever told you about my Uncle Nick, did I?
No.
All my uncles played professional football in Canada. My Uncle Nick, shortly after, I remember him, I remember riding on his shoulders and walking with him on along a river, a beautiful river in a meadow, and a lady behind the house had these prize-winning ducks in cages. Beautiful feathering, you know, beautiful plumage, unbelievable, shiny like blue diamonds. I remember that, and I remember him laughing. But you know what I don't remember? A few weeks later, Uncle Nick in the hospital, in a coma for 2 years, after he was trying out for Hamilton's Tiger Cats spot. 2 years in a coma and then dead. My Uncle Nick. So when I wanted to play football, we didn't have sports when I was a kid. When I was a kid, you know what my sports were? Robert Louis Stevenson. Those were my sports. To read. My parents did not encourage sports at all. So probably my dad thought, you know, now that at least I wasn't playing with dolls. But I guess I did. I played with G.I. Joes. My dad didn't know any better. And he thought, okay, my son's going that way, probably. And my mom was happy because I wasn't playing sports. And something happened. You know what it was? Hmm. Puberty. Puberty happened. And all of a sudden I realized that elemental thing that's in every boy. And it's not in girls. The love of conquest and violence. Because we are animals and we are hunters. And I respect that in all of us. And all of a sudden, I started to grow. And I started to get a little muscle on my neck. I started getting fights. When I was a little boy, I was beat up every day. When I was in eighth grade, I had a fight every afternoon. Every afternoon, it was like revenge on everything. Revenge. And then came football. I walked into football. My parents said, no, you're not playing. I said, yes, I am. And I was like, if I didn't play, football, I would have been in jail. There's a lot of anger in me, a lot of stuff that went on, a lot of things that happened in my life. Everyone's got their problems, okay? It's not all leave it to Beaverland.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mom and Dad let me play. And I loved it. I loved every minute of getting smashing people and getting smashed. That's really what it is,
sure.
Right? It's really, I mean, I gave away 50 pounds to the defensive tackle across from me every game. At least 50. I was a 150-pound guard. All the other guys were like 220 on the line.
Yeah.
You know what was so great about it? And I'm not talking about like I'm in a bar talking about how my great, because I wasn't that great of a player. But I was a mean player, and I loved it. And the idea of exploding, taking your fist and punching another guy across from you who's like 220 pounds on the first play of the game, and then he looks at you, some guy from Thorn Ridge that you've seen twice a year, all your, you know, for the last 3 years, and your senior year, it's like, which one of us is going to punch that guy first, right, in the line? Gut, like left hooks or right, bang, and say, come on, let's go, let's dance, and going at it all game. And at the end of the game, you look at each other, you're both beat up, you're both tired, you really got the crap kicked out of you, you maybe gave a lick or two, and you look in the guy's eyes, and he looks in yours, and it's not like love, okay? This is not kumbaya, but it's like an understanding of where you were, both of you together. You know what I mean? In that game. And that's the thing that I love about it, and that's the thing that keeps you there. Okay? That's the thing that keeps people there who played it and loved it. But here's a problem. Children get brain damage because of it. And those of us who walked away kind of lucky were very lucky because we had all the lessons that it taught me. It taught me I would not be here today if I hadn't played football for Gary Kilhornan, of Richards High School, who at times I hated. Okay? You're sweating? You know, you're having two-a-day practices? Here's some salt pills. No, water's for pussies. What are you, a pussy? No water for you. Salt pills and a little chip of ice. It's amazing that we didn't die out on the field. But you know what that made us, that experience, those of us who lasted? It built something in you that's in your core to this day. And every guy who ever played in high school who understands what I'm talking about, no, I mean, they can feel it, I bet you. And so that's the love of it, of the expression of chasing death. When you're doing those sprints, those last 40-yard sprints with your helmet on and your that scab on your forehead, because you're, you know, your helmet scab and you're stinking and sweating and you lost already 20 pounds and you're running those sprints and doing those monkey rolls and you think you are going to die and you don't care. You don't care if you're going to die because you're not going to give up. And that thing, whatever that is, when you reach to that, whatever you're reaching for at that moment, that's what we can't give up, but we have to. Because these children are going to be destroyed.
Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by. And feed them on your dreams. The one they picked, the one you know by.
And now with us is Tom Bevan, my good friend, and the co-founder, publisher of the Real Clear Politics Empire, and also a Chicago area resident, who you see him everywhere, and you can find him, find that website on, damn it, find it on realclearpolitics.com. Good morning, Tom.
Hey, John, how are you?
Tom, what is going on with in Washington the other day? I saw Louis Gutierrez, the firebrand of Chicago. I call him the heroic taxpayer because he had a $350,000 house and he only paid $250 in property taxes a year in some deal and got away with it.
Now, funny how that works, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't it? It's a Chicago way thing, I guess. And now he's out there, you know, leading the people on the immigration fight. And he went so far as to condemn the chief of staff of the White House, General Kelly, by saying he was a disgrace to his uniform. It's almost as if the Democrats, you know, I can understand policy differences, but when Gutierrez embarrasses his state, his city, all the people of Illinois by saying that about a man like Kelly, I don't know what else to say. What did you think of that?
Yeah, it was way, way, way over the line. I mean, I've interviewed Gutierrez, as I'm sure you have, and he's a likable guy. I mean, he's obviously very left-wing, very radical, especially on immigration. I mean, he's an open borders guy. But he's also, you know, he's likable. He's colorful. He's sort of gregarious and all that. But this was really, I mean, the disgrace was him saying this. I mean, he's never served in the military at all. And here he is, you know, upbraiding and publicly castigating a decorated, you know, Marine general.
Whose own son, he's a Gold Star father general. His son died as a Marine, young Marine died in combat, you know, a few years ago in Afghanistan.
Yeah, it was disgraceful. It really was. It was over the line, and he should have apologized. And I think it does go to a couple of things. Number one, it reinforces this idea that, you know, Democrats are not they don't view military service, you know, sort of revere it in the same way that Republicans do or most Americans do. But also this idea that our rhetoric, our politics is so poisonous that people will go and just say the most outrageous stuff. I mean, stuff that is way beyond the pale. And this happens more and more frequently. And, you know, Republicans are guilty of it too. But, I mean, Democrats say crazy stuff. I mean, if you remember, I'm just thinking off the top of my head. Remember when Debbie Wasserman Schultz said that Scott Walker was, like, dragging women around by their hair? I mean, just there's all sorts of – and now, of course, you know, anybody who's associated with Trump is a racist and a white nationalist. I mean, these kind of slurs are just – they're thrown around so casually these days that it's really you know, it's depressing, it's desensitizing, and we just continue to get more of it.
Two takeaways from your comment that I get right here. One is it's not only the Democrats are beyond the pale, because they are. It's that the media in general, and I'm in it, and I know it, and so do you, and I've been in it 30 years, and I've never seen it so far left. And part of the reason is, I think, everyone has an opinion now. Everybody's a columnist. Everybody just go out there and give your opinion on Twitter and then carry it on in your copy. So if you are if you oppose unfettered, illegal immigration, therefore, in the minds of many who are in the pundit class and just the journalist class, if you oppose illegal immigration, you are a bigot. Therefore, you are a Nazi. Therefore, you are a Trump hater, liker. Therefore, you are a racist. And then I guess if you're a racist, Nazi, bigot, Ku Klux Klan guy, then you could send the Antifa to beat the hell out of you with whatever they do, you know, when they beat people up. And it's okay. And people get that sense. They see it. The average American see that kind of dialogue and see the extension of it and the progression. And I wonder if what they're thinking about, because it's just, to me, gone. You can't have reasonable policy discussions when you're calling everybody Nazis because they disagree with you.
I agree. And I think this is something that eventually Democrats will have to, I think, account for and be called to account for, you know, just the immigration issue in particular, right? To your point, the Democrats have Gutierrez is no longer really out of the mainstream of the Democratic Party. It is now There is no just talk of border security is now considered sort of verboten in the Democratic Party. They really have adopted for all intents and purposes this an open border policy, a very unrestrictive immigration policy, and that's obscured among the current policy debates and what's going on with Trump and the wall and all of that, but it's now part of the Democratic Party. It was written in their platform in 2016. It's something that on that issue, on this issue of Antifa, I mean, again, no Democrats really. I mean, I shouldn't say no. A few have come to their senses and condemned it, but by and large, this was a group that, you know, who's against anti-fascism? Everybody wants to be. Nobody's with the fascists.
Right.
But it turns out these folks are actually fascists in their own right.
Yes, they are.
And they were not called to, you know, Democrats were not put on the spot and asked to condemn it in the same way that Republicans are always put on the spot and were put on the spot to condemn these, you know, KKK, this fringe, you know, 0.0001% of loser, you know, white supremacists who are marching around some statue in Virginia.
If you know anyone like that, if you have any relationship with anyone who's a KKK, whatever those kids are, you know, with their tiki torches or whatever, if you know them, if you knew one, you will be, if you're a Republican, you will be held to account by the mob in the media. When are you going to disavow? When are you going to do? What about this? What about? But why is it that again and again and again, damn it, Tom, and I love my profession and I'm really concerned about my craft because I can see it devolving. The Democrats are not held to account for Antifa.
Well, circle back, John, just to the thing that we discussed earlier, okay? If a Republican member of the House said some crazy stuff, something that's way over the line, slandering some general or something, you can be sure that Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell and everybody in Washington would be asked whether they agreed with that or condemned it or were forced to condemn it.
Right.
And I'm not aware. Maybe someone did ask Nancy Pelosi the question. She had a press conference the other day. But I'm not aware that she was asked about whether she agreed with Gutierrez that John Kelly was a disgrace to his uniform. And that's the kind of thing, you know, again, Republicans would be asked, every Republican on the Hill would be asked whether they agree with that or disagree with it. Do they disavow it? That kind of thing. And Democrats are not asked that in the same way. And they should be. I mean,
why not?
I don't think it occurs to the media to do that. I mean, they just kind of, you know, they get a pass on it. And that is, I think, part of what drives, you know, Republicans crazy about the media is this sort of double standard that exists and continues to show up in all sorts of different ways across the media.
Is it possible that this lack of, because I've been at that type of news conference where I'm the skunk at the garden party and asked that question. And in Chicago media, I'm telling you, okay, all broadcast, print, it's not center left anymore. It's far, you know, it just left. And you ask that question and people kind of roll their eyes like, okay, so what are you causing trouble for? The radio guys especially, their mics start drooping as if they're having some sort of interviewist, you know. Like, oh, we want them to talk.
Sort.
Yeah, we want them to talk about the Bears or something. Right? And they get all upset. But it seems to me that the larger problem here is that if the American people, the millions and millions who voted for Trump, don't see at least an sort of an even-handedness in that thing that we're talking about, it's the kind of thing that tends to drive them to the extremists of the far right. And that's what worries me. It's not that that some suburban thugs who were playing video games 2 days ago are now going to wear masks and scare me, because I've actually seen real gangsters and they're not like suburban boys with Guy Fawkes masks on. But that the American people then tend to drift the other way toward the people that we find, all of us find reprehensible. That's what bothers me.
Well, look, I would disagree. I don't think that, I mean, I think frustration with the media and the double standards and that kind of thing, I don't think that necessarily drives Republicans or conservatives into the arms of, you know, fringe elements or neo-Nazis. What it does do, I think, and has done, is destroy the media's credibility to the point where, you know, a lot of conservatives will read newspapers, watch newscasts, listen to radio programs, and think to themselves, I don't believe a word that I'm reading or that I'm seeing or that I'm hearing, because I just don't trust the media at all to be, you know, so they just dismiss it out of hand, everything, including parts that may be true or informative or whatever. They just think it's all a pack of lies, and they've tuned it out. And that is, we've talked about this on your podcast before. I mean, that's really damaging. And I don't know how you rebuild that trust. I mean, it just don't, and you end up, these folks, they end up getting their information from, you know, their Facebook circles, or, you know, they're driven to sort of more and more, I think, cocoon themselves
exactly
in media and places and outlets that they feel like they can trust. And that's not necessarily a good thing.
It's not a good path for a republic to be on. Clearly it is not.
Not at all.
Okay. So in the few seconds we have left, Tom Bevin, what do you make of this new wonderful relationship between the President of the United States and his good friends, the Democrat of Botox, what's her name, the terracotta?
Nancy Pelosi.
Don't smile, Nancy, your head will crack. And Chuck Schumer, who, like, is the fan of every airline flight attendant in the United States.
You know, I was just in Washington, D.C. for a couple days, and this really has, I mean, Trump is a disruptor, unquestionably, and has been that way on a number of different levels. But this was almost an order of magnitude more disruption, because you had Republicans were just dumbfounded by this deal that he cut, where he sort of gave away the store, you know.
That's silly.
They wanted 18 months. They wanted 6 months. He's like, Democrats are like, we'll give you 3 months. And Trump's like, done. And then, you know, I mean, think about this, too. 48 hours ago, Nancy Pelosi was calling Trump a political coward over DACA. And, you know, days before that, they were railing against the, you know, white nationalists in the White House and the racists, and they all got to be fired.
Now
they're BFFs. And they're talking about, you know, Nancy Pelosi's talking about, I tell Trump what to tweet and he tweets it. And it's just, so I don't know. I mean, I think the Democrats' idea of compromise is Trump did what they wanted, right?
Right.
The minute Trump doesn't give them what they want, you know, it's no longer going to be considered compromise. He's going to be back to being. And by the way, I'm sure the left wing of the party is so, you know, outraged by this, too. I mean, Dianne Feinstein said something the other day. She said, well, you know, give Trump a chance, or I hope he's successful or something. And
he's,
she had to issue
president,
like, four apologies. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's you can't express any of that stuff, or the left wing goes nuts.
She was so upset about it that she, I guess, metaphorically put a Catholic law professor from Notre Dame on the stake and started burning her for dogma. Yeah, right.
Yeah. So meanwhile, Republicans are just up in arms about this. And so, look, I don't think Republicans, they don't trust Trump now. I don't think Democrats trust Trump. And I think Trump would be stupid to trust Democrats, because, again, the moment he doesn't, you know, give them what they want, they're going to be back to, you know, total opposition. He's not going to get any help from them to move any of this legislation unless it includes all the things that they want. So I think the relationships of Washington have sort of deteriorated another level because of this deal. And I understand what Trump wanted. He wanted a bipartisan deal. He wanted to show, you know, we're on top of hurricane relief. That's all well and good. And I think he also did change the subject from the DACA stuff, which he was getting railed on, to suddenly now, you know, he's shifted the conversation back to a more positive way for him. But I just don't know where this leads. You know, Congress has a lot to get done. They don't have a lot of time. And
lower my taxes, dudes. Okay, that's what I want.
Hey Tom.
Yeah, I mean, if they can do it.
Yeah, right. Tom, it's interesting, too, because it's almost like this is his style of negotiating, because he's been one of these people who is like, he works with somebody, goes back and forth across the table, and then nothing happens. And then he turns to their opponent, or their, you know, whoever's trying to offer a similar service. And then he works with them and says, hey, look, you could have had this. I mean, he's been known to do that in the past. And in the morning we're taping this, he tweeted out essentially that to the Republicans. Says, hey, sorry, I tried to get you guys to do Obamacare. You didn't do it. You haven't done anything. So I got to do what I got to do, you know, deal with it. And it's almost like he's just trying to leverage angst against angst. And it, I don't know where the end game is.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, because, again, remember, part of Trump's base, or a lot of Trump's base, they hate Republicans just as much as they hate Democrats. Right. I mean, they're not, they hate, you know, Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell. They're not, they don't, it doesn't bother them at all to see those guys put, you know, the screws to those guys. So, yes. And I talked to a lot of people about this, and people who know Trump and have been with Trump and in government and business. And they said, this doesn't surprise them at all. Mm-hmm. He is, he can be that kind of impulsive, you know, let's just get a deal done. But you have, you know, Sean Duffy and some of these other members of Congress saying, you know, criticizing this guy for doing a terrible deal. I mean, this is what how Trump ran and was elected, was saying, you know, the government is so stupid. We have all these stupid people making these stupid deals. And, I'll get in there and I'll do good deals for the American people. So he gets in there. He does this deal. And now he's got his own members of his own party saying this is the worst deal. It's a terrible, you know, it's remarkable. The way that this thing has played out. And to your point, I don't know where it leads. I think Republicans are hoping this is just a one-off thing and he gets, you know, to clear the decks and they can get to work on lowering John Cass's taxes.
And Tom Bevins. You know why, Tom? You know why we need to lower our taxes, man? Because you and I are going to sit front row at the Hillary Clinton VIP section when she comes to Chicago. I think it's only 3,000, maybe it's 5,000 now. If you get it on StubHub, maybe the price is going up. And we can sit there and have Hillary sit on my lap, and I could put my arm around her, and she could give me that smile of sincerity, because we don't want the Democrats to lock her in the closet, man. We don't want her to lock her in the basement. She's out there, poor Hillary, man. Love her a little
poor
bit.
Poor Hillary.
From the forest to the basement.
It is going to be, Democrats are just beside themselves at the fact that she's going to go out there and do this, you know, the great blame tour. And she's, you know, she's blaming Matt Lauer and the Russians and everybody, and that's fine.
Sanders.
The one thing that I have not seen, John, I was thinking about this earlier, the one excerpt of this book I have not seen, and I'm going to be interested to see whether it's even in the book, because you can talk about all the stuff that she...
Right.
You know, the bad advice she got or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the one thing, probably the most damaging thing she did the entire campaign, was call Trump supporters a basket of deplorables. Nobody forced her to do that. I'm sure nobody advised her to do that. So I'm going to be interested to see how she blames that one away.
It's the media's fault. Because it's the media's fault. That's the media's against her, Tom Bevin. That's her rationale.
I mean,
because you know why?
Nobody's going to buy that. Mitt Romney's 47% moment. I mean, they both got the same treatment for it, and those were both very harmful comments in the context of both campaigns. So,
if you were truly a great publisher of Real Clear Politics, you would find the grave of William Makepeace Thackeray, reanimate him, and have him write 10,000 words on Hillary. Okay, could you please do that?
Hey, listen, I just want to before we leave the taxes issue, if Congress can't lower our taxes, John, I think what we need is we need to find Luis Gutierrez's tax lawyer. And just if we could just get a property tax deal like him, we'd be in, you know, that would be helpful, too.
It's not because it was a wizard. It was a Chicago wizard. And it was that he was living in a literally in a vacant lot, according to the county tax rolls. In a vacant lot, I assumed it was like a cardboard box with his wife, who's now in banking, I think. And, they lived
in
the vacant lot.
You know what? Then maybe, you know, if he's busy, we could get Pritzker's tax attorney to help us out.
Yeah, especially if we can find him on the Grand Cayman Islands, right? But that's a story for another. That's a story for another day, my friend. Tom Bevin, Real Clear Politics. Thanks so much for being here today.
You bet.
See you, buddy. 'Cause I got friends in low places where the whiskey drowns and the beer chases my blues away. So here's my former conservative friend, Scott Stannis. Scott Stannis, the great award-winning cartoonist, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, is here. And I like to tease him on occasion. And now he's saying, I don't know, how is it that I could come to the belief, Scott Stannis, my friend, and I hope you come on again.
Okay.
Have you been criticized by others who don't know you that you're not as conservative as you used to be?
Yeah, that I haven't. Yeah.
Is that a good way
I've had that
it?
My entire career, though.
Blame it on. Yeah.
Because I'm not
I
going
get
to.
It too.
We get. I mean, I worked at, really. In Birmingham, Alabama for years, and we had a Republican governor when I got there, a guy named Fob James. Yes, Fob James. Oh, I'm
a good old boy, huh?
Yeah.
Did you hook him on your watch?
And he was a moron. And he was a bad governor, made bad decisions, and so the fact that he had an R after his name did not mean I was going to walk lockstep behind him, and that's how I work.
So what bothers you about conservatives today? Because
bothers me? Nothing. I can't wait. In fact, I just wrote in my comic strip, Prickly City, I said I can't wait for the Pence presidency. I think that's going to be awesome.
So you don't like Trump at all. You never did.
No.
But now, but you seem to be upset over DACA. What's going on with you?
With DACA, because I think it was a reasonable... first off, we can go into the tall weeds. I don't think anyone wants to hear that, but it just seemed to me to be a reasonable approach.
Too tall for me.
Too tall? It just seemed to me to be a reasonable approach to kids who are brought here. It did give a pathway to citizenship. You do have to register. It does all the things that we conservatives claim we like. But it was done by executive fiat, and that's probably unconstitutional.
Here's my concern, and I'm just speaking not for myself or you, but for everybody else in the media in this town.
Okay, go ahead.
Since they don't listen to this podcast, we're safe, right, Jeff?
Yeah.
The sense I get from reading and from watching everything that others write and say, not Scott Stannis, not John Cass, is that if you are opposed to the Obama executive order and spitting on the Constitution business called I've got a pen and a phone, DACA. Therefore, if you're opposed to it, you're opposed to unfettered immigration, which makes you a racist, which makes you a Nazi, which makes you a Ku Klux Klan member, which makes you a Trump friend, which allows people to beat you up if they're wearing those ridiculous black fascist of the left costumes.
Yes.
And I find this, I can understand it if we're talking about two-dimensional stick puppets in somewhere, but I can't imagine it in a reasonable discussion of policy, but that's what I see.
And you can. And you can make
it. I see it in the policy discussions in newspapers and on TV and in broadcast where these smears are taking place all the time.
Oh, and it builds. Oh, I mean, how many times a week are you called? I'm called a racist, a fascist. I mean, to the point where these titles mean nothing, because guess what? There really is real fascism in the world.
Yeah.
There really is real racism in the world. Including
there's real poverty in the world, too, and it's not in the United States, okay? If you want to see real poverty, go to Haiti after the...
God.
Okay? Yeah. That's poverty.
So
poverty isn't when you have a 60-inch TV in a car. That's not poverty.
So, Doc, I mean, I just mentioned it as we were discussing. A cartoon has to have one idea, and I thought knocking it down without anything else was wrong. However, the president did say pass it on to the Congress. I think that's brilliant, by the way, because, hey, you guys either have to vote yes or no. You're on the record, yes or no on this
stuff. But people were upset before he passed it. He said, I'm going to change it. They started screaming fascism. Why? Why?
Why do you think, John? Because that's the left, and it's the Democratic interest, and these people vote Democratic.
Chelsea Handler summed it up the best. President Trump is creating a country where white supremacists and Nazis are welcome, but hardworking people who are brought here as children are not.
Hardworking children? That makes
Who is that person again? I've heard her name.
Chelsea Handler?
Yeah.
She
shows her breasts
a comedian. That's also true. She's pop.
Are they nice breasts? Just say yes or no.
No?
Sure. Okay.
But anyway, that was
But she takes her shirt off and talks politics? Why not?
Sure.
That, John? Should we do it now?
If I do that, you're going to see a chunk of back hair. The Brooks Brothers goes off and you see the back hair. That's awesome. you know?
Yeah, but that was the outrage. That's the idea that, well, you know, he loves Nazis and he hates the poor.
Okay, but so if I'm opposed to, I'm an immigrant son. I'm not opposed to immigration, you morons, you useful idiots of the liberal left. I you know what? I can't even believe. Anytime, I just should stay on my deck and drink my gin and tonics. Because when I come down here and I get this sort of, like the look and the.
And not in a good way.
Oh,
Cass is here.
Cass is here. Oh, like that. What is that? Oh, like a little sad face. And the little paw comes up, you know, like the little doggy. Like after I just tripped over him and broke my goddamn ankle like I did this week.
Did you break it?
What?
Is that a break?
No, I didn't break it, but okay. I wanted to talk to Scott about Scott, but okay. Can I just mention one thing?
Of course.
All right, so at dinner, I'm walking across, you know, like we're rushing back and forth. Like, I got this, you have this. I get up, and I'm ostentatiously getting up to get more lemons. And Betty says, I already put lemons on it. It's a pork tenderloin. She squeezes. Sure. I have to have my own lemon to squeeze. This is me. You know, I want fresh. You know what I mean? I wanted to have fresh. So I ostentatiously get up out of the chair and do a little stomp foot, like, you know, on the wood floor. You guys have been there in the mm-hmm. kitchen. And she's like, oh, geez. And in the meantime, someone, my son or my mom is what, and there's the dog sitting, like, on the edge of begging. Like, not in yeah. the begging area, but looking at us, sure. like, on the, and I'm trying to pass him, and I trip over him. Because I'm wearing flip-flops like a stupid fool that I am. So, 2 o'clock in the morning, I can't sleep. My ankle's killing me. It's swollen to the size of a grapefruit. I come downstairs to try to get some. Okay, what I was trying to find are those pills you're not supposed to take.
Okay.
I think I had some.
Okay.
And I can't. Now I can't find them, and I can't get back upstairs. So I call Betty. She wraps my leg up with. I call her on the cell phone. She's still sleeping upstairs. She's like, what, hon? What, honey? I'm like, honey, can you please, you know, come down here? She comes down, gives me an ice bag, wraps it up.
John, you married up no matter what.
I am so
lucky. Yeah, no
lucky,
kidding. Oh, know? We both
and
did, man.
And don't worry, Christine and Janine would do the same thing for
absolutely.
You guys, right? No question. So I'm on the, now I'm on, now she goes back upstairs, the TV's on. I'm tied up on my, you know, my legs tied up with the ice. TV's on, and I can't find the remote control because it's on the table behind me, and I can't get up. And there's a movie called Aliens. What the
Arrival. It's 2.
I told them, Alien Arrival 2, which is the worst goddamn movie in the history of science.
Is that part of the Alien franchise?
No. It's remember the Charlie Sheen Arrival movie? It was like 91. They made a terrible sequel to it. I mean, the first one wasn't that great either, but the second one was even worse.
Like one of the worst sci-fi movies of all
time.
It's
just Arrival, not Alien Arrival, but Arrival 2.
Arrival 2. And like a journalist is in it, and they say, I report. I'm a journalist. I'm reporting. And
how many times have you said that in your career, John?
Right. It's all the time we talk like that. And the aliens have taken over, in human form, have taken over the country, and they have made, check this out, they're raising the temperature of the globe because they've taken over the government and the industry with their alien, like they're lizards, but they have alien, like human faces.
Holy
but,
crap, it's Illinois.
And they're raising, yes, exactly, and they're raising the temperature so that the other alien lizards can come over and live in the planet once the environment is destroyed by global warming. And it's 1999. I'm watching this thing. It's already starting the propaganda. 1999, and I'm stuck on the damn couch. I don't even have a drink. I didn't get my real pain pill, you know, the one I wanted. I'm on some aspirin, and stuck watching this movie in the middle of the night, dude.
It sounds like the perfect movie for the middle of the night, managing pain kind of movie.
Did you ever get stuck in a movie, Scott? Shutting up now. Can you guys talk? But
well, I want to know, have you gone to a doctor? Has it been x-rayed and what?
No, because I was able to put my shoe on. And
well,
I put my shoe on and
nine out of ten doctors agree if you can put your shoe on.
Yeah, that's okay. You don't have lupus or cancer or a broken
ankle. Well, I'm not going to have cancer of the ankle, for God's sake. And if I do, then just chop it off, slap some iron on it, put a peg in there, and give me a parrot. Okay? Because really,
John has always wanted to run his own ship.
You know what? That hurt me, man.
No, I know you have.
It's true.
I know it's true. That's what I'm saying. You'd be a good pirate. In that instance.
Matey.
So you haven't gone to a doctor? It swells up to the size of a grapefruit.
It's okay now. It went down. Okay?
And John frightened the internet with a shot of his leg.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, the hairy leg. Someone.
Your friend,
dude. Patty Vasquez takes my leg shot and freaks out and puts it on her Facebook. Oh, my God. We've seen Cass's leg. This is terrible. Ugly, chunky.
She was saying, we were trying to talk about the nicer things in life, and then all of a sudden this popped up on her feed, and she was it ruined it.
Oh, yeah. For those of you who don't know, Scott Stannis occasionally is on with her. She's very funny. And
yes.
Obviously, Scott is, if I would ever let him have a damn word edgewise. And Scott calls me. They called me up in the middle of the night once on their
we don't do
wake
that
up call. Oh no!
No, no. Patty got Patty got the number of the mayor.
Oh, that's right. He got pissed off.
Oh yes, yes.
That's an understatement.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, not a good idea to call Littlefinger in the middle of the night,
or in the middle of the day.
Yeah, that's true. But not so once, but twice.
So what's up, Scott? What's up in your life, man?
What's up? I've been wrestling with, you did touch on the, whole, am I conservative, am I not? Yeah, I mean.
Why, because you're just going pink? Oh, I still
no,
love
no, no,
you,
I'm
dude.
Libertarian. I'm libertarian conservative. I did vote for Gary Johnson this term because I couldn't, and I would. I have never voted for, shut up. I've never voted for a Democratic for president ever, never will.
I did. Jimmy Carter? No?
No. Jerry Ford? I worked on the Ford campaign.
Hey. Here's how we can test. Scott Stannis?
Yes.
If you're really, because people are wondering, are you conservative now or not? No, you are conservative. You're just, people are saying that because they want to push you one way or another. That's all they always do. So let me ask you this. Jeff Carlin and Scott Stannis, when Hillary Clinton comes to town, are you guys going to be in the front row behind the VIP section with the other Clintonistas? And I would say wearing you have to wear like turtleneck sweaters and scarves, many scarves and jewelry.
John,
like
you don't do a turtleneck and a scarf. That's just redundant.
You?
And
the
you
jewelry,
can,
you know that like hippie jewelry from the 70s, like big chunks of wood jewelry?
Right.
You got to wear that. And you have to have the big glass, bowl glasses, but not the cool big glasses you guys wear now, but the 70s big glasses. And like a bowl haircut, like wigs, like. Like two, chicks from Oak Park, one with a beard,
That would be me, I guess.
Wouldn't that be?
I'm not going
to
do
cool.
that. I'm not going to do that.
Hillary!
And I'm not going to shell out that kind of money. How much is it? $75 for an autograph or something? I mean, it's crazy. She's doing the Hillary thing all over again. And she's like, what happened? I'll tell you what happened. You ran for president and you're a lousy candidate. That's what happened. You lost, you won she won the popular vote. Yes, she did. Indeed, she did. It's like saying the Bears are going to, could lose 45 to 10.
Let her out of the basement.
But they had the most yards rushing. That's awesome.
Don't be down on Hillary. I'm sick of these Hillary critics of the right, like Scott Stannis. I am so sick of them.
It's just because she's a woman. No.
Yes, because you're an ageist and you're a... you're an androgynous.
Misogynist.
Yeah,
I'm an androgynous too, but okay.
Misogynist.
Yes.
Let her out of the basement. Leave her alone. Elevate her to her rightful place as head of the Democratic Party so the people can see the person that really cared about them the most.
She led them to defeat. Why? I mean, and a lot of Democrats, as you mentioned in your column, have said, shut up and go away.
That's rude.
Of course it is.
Let her stay.
Well, it's a free country. She can do anything she wants to.
Let her stay. Let her stay. Let her stay. Isn't that like let it go? Let her stay. She's Hillary, man.
Wow.
I'm
convinced.
I want her. I'm starting to think.
I'm convinced she's running again.
Not only that, she comes out of the woods. She won't need the White House. She's got that little wood house. with the chicken legs that could move to any part of the woods in the world.
Well, don't forget, she took all that stuff from the White House, too, when they left.
She's going to eat children. And
the Baba Yaga? Is that uncool to call her Baba Yaga, which is a witch, because she's a woman? Like, you can't do it now? I guess now that everyone calls Trump everything, it's okay now.
Yeah.
No,
oh, yeah.
No. John!
What?
Bad, John. Hit you in the nose with the paper. Bad, John. No. Hey. You can make fun of white male Republicans, and that's it.
You know what, man?
That's
it. People ask me, why don't you work down at the Tribune more often? Why aren't you down here every day? And I say, hostile work environment, baby. Okay? Even though I love everybody. And I do. Okay? And we're a ship of diversity floating on the Republic Sea. And we love everybody. And I love Jeff Carlin, WGN, my partner.
Hey.
Hey. Scott Stannis.
I can't make fun of that.
Scott, no, you can't. Not now. Scott Stannis, the ace, I almost said choreographer, cartoonist. Now that
one
he's
and
a pinko
two and three and dip and twirl and three
of the
and four.
Chicago Tribune. He's not really. He's conservative, adhering to his principles. Tom Bevin from Real Clear Politics. And all the people that I insulted today who pimp for the NFL and who might want to wear, like, you know, 70s clothes to a Hillary rally from Oak Park. I really didn't mean it. Okay? This is John Cass, the Chicago Way. Who loves you, baby? Talk to you next week.